Hello and welcome to The Course. I'm your host today, Lee, and I'm speaking with Associate Professor Robert Galati from the Department of Political Science. His research examines the relationship between national governments and global markets, particularly how the competitive interests of local and global firms undermine economic cooperation, how the design and operations of the global trade regime reflect the political goals of leading governments, and how politicians evade accountability. Professor Galati is here to talk to us about his career path and how he became a University of Chicago professor. Welcome to The Course, Professor Robert Galati. It is a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Robert, let's start off with an overview of your career path. Take me from your undergraduate college years all the way to your current role at the university.
Well, as an undergraduate, I was at Ohio State University, a very large public school, and I was studying political science and philosophy with the intention of working for the State Department. My idea was that I really wanted to do something in international relations, and I was growing up in an environment where what you did with your career was something practical, something with a career associated with it. The nice thing about government work is that they have a well-defined pathway where you join up early on in your life, and you get promotions based mostly off seniority. And so that sounded very stable and something that was attractive to me as even as an undergrad. But, you know, that was my idea prior to getting to college. Once I got there, I quickly discovered that the life of the mind was attractive to me. The life of the professor was particularly good. And so I embarked from there on an effort to try to get a faculty position, basically. During my junior and senior years, I started orienting myself to take graduate courses. And then I applied myself to the GRE and other testing in order to get into graduate school. And so I went off to Stanford University to get a PhD in political science. I saw political science as a field where jobs were available relative to philosophy, my other area of interest, and an area where I saw myself excelling. Now, once you go off into graduate school, you're basically set for 6 years. I knew that that was going to be the path that I was going to be on prior to trying to get a faculty position somewhere. But halfway through my graduate training, I took a year off, went off to the World Trade Organization to both test out ideas and also to get a sense of what the real world was a little bit like. And then I came back and finished my PhD with a new dissertation topic obtained from that experience, and then started applying for faculty positions and was lucky enough to get an interview and an offer from the University of Chicago, where I've been ever since. I took a year prior to starting my faculty position as a postdoc. The university and increasingly universities are giving graduate students who have assistant professor positions available to them a year to do research where they're not required to teach. And they often use that as a postdoc year. I spent my postdoctoral year back at Stanford at CEPR, an organization for the study of international economics and policy research. And then after that year, I started teaching here at the University of Chicago and in the college. And I spent my tenure track years at the university, teaching in both international political economy and in the methods program here in the political science department. And then and I was promoted to an associate professor as of last June. And now I'm here. So the career path is a relatively straightforward one in the sense that I kind of got a sense once I'd experienced college, that college was something that the life of the professor that services those college students was a life that I really saw an attraction to. And that was that sort of combination of the academic life that I found attractive, as well as some sense of a stable career that led me into political science, graduate study, and eventually into a faculty position here.
Thanks for that, Robert. Can you tell me a little bit about your particular expertise? Like, what do you research under the umbrella of political science?
So my area is called international political economy, and it is a relatively new area of study. It's a subfield within international relations, and it generally covers basically all relations between states that are not war. That can include the day-to-day workings of negotiations at the IMF or the World Bank or the World Trade Organization. And outside of government, the flow of people, goods, and services and ideas in the marketplace. and the relationship between those flows and politics. So the people that study how China's rise and competition with the American workers has affected the rise of right-wing populism in the United States are often working in my area of international political economy, as well as people studying the inner workings of trade agreements and how firms are influencing outcome. And I do work across all of those areas. And one of the things that's always attracted me to political science in particular is its ecumenical and sort of Catholic perspective, allowing you to use a wide variety of techniques and methods to apply to political life. You know, the reason I love or was so attracted to academic life in the first place is because of its freedom. And political science, I always saw as being one of the most free fields in the sense of its openness to other methodologies and questions, so long as you spoke somewhat to politics. And I've taken advantage of that in my own work. I have work on, right now, the relationship between democracy and oversight institutions, a traditional, what we call comparative politics question or internal politics question. I have work on the trade war and U.S. subsidies to the farming community after being damaged by U.S. competition with China. And I also have work that's more of a historical basis on the origins of the global trade regime and how it relates to contemporary efforts to destroy that program on both the left and the right. So I've been lucky to talk about a wide variety of areas in political science, but my expertise tends to draw directly from the political economy tradition. And what the political economy tradition is, either the study of markets and its relation to politics, so that's a substantive area, or a particular set of methodologies generally imported from economics to study political questions. And I use a combination of both of those things. Drawing on my training in economics, I have a master's in economics that I obtained while I was in graduate school, as well as my substantive interests in the workings of the global trade system, leads me to be at the intersection of those two areas in international political economy.
Thanks for that explanation. So, Robert, I imagine, you know, you didn't always know that you wanted to be a political science professor. What did you think you were going to be when you were younger, like when you were in middle and high school?
Right. So growing up, I grew up with my mother's a non-American. She's from the Netherlands. And so we were always a little bit set apart from the rest of our community in mid-Michigan. And I found a strong desire to try to get out of mid-Michigan, to do something like out in the world. You know, somewhere beyond the boundaries of the county. And in those efforts, I would read a lot about other places. I would read a lot about social and political and historical life outside of my community. And one way you do that is through activities that you have at the high school level. And I was lucky enough to join a debate team run by Amy Bushy, a teacher at my high school, at Dow High School. And she gave me a book about international relations, about a theory of politics where states were governments or countries were modeled as billiard balls. And the billiard balls were only differentiated based off their size and maybe how fast they're moving. And I was always interested in science, but the idea that you could come up with a scientific model of politics was totally new to me. And so it was through my experience in a high school debate with Amy Bushy that led me to be exposed to ideas like John Mearsheimer's ideas here at the University of Chicago that led me to think that international relations was a field that could be studied scientifically. Now, since then, I've been exposed to a lot more political science, and I can see the limitations of those billiard ball models, but it was that early exposure in high school that got me excited about it. And I know a lot of high school students, even today, are inspired by their exposure to this work. So, going to college, I was like ready to do political science. And what political science meant, if you read a political science like manual, is that you're going to go work for the government. And if you're interested in international relations, you work as an international bureaucrat. So that's what I saw myself doing because I'm a rule follower. I'll look at the thing. I'll be like, all right, that's, I guess, what you do if you have this major. But I found myself a little bit dissatisfied with the idea of being an international bureaucrat, not because I don't like the bureaucracy or the idea of the rules, but rather that it felt a little bit intellectually narrowing. I'd have to focus on one specific area. If you're in the State Department, you often have to regional expertise. But I was more interested in sort of abstract theoretical questions. And I also found that when I talked to people in the State Department or the CIA or other government agencies, they didn't really have much to say that was positive about academic life or about academic political science. They saw it as too removed from anything that really mattered. But I loved that abstract stuff. And so for me, it became clear that maybe the bureaucracy wasn't going to be a good fit for me, which I probably could have guessed from before, because as a high schooler or middle schooler, I was always well behaved, but I also would get in fights with authority figures. So by contrast, the life of the professor was immediately attractive. They got to say, or teach whatever they wanted, it seems. I took a course from a great advisor of mine, Michael Neblo, on the political context of magical realist novels in the political science course. The idea that you could put together whatever idea came up to you and learn about it and work on it whenever you wanted seemed to be super attractive to me. I also met a professor, Daniel Verdier, who's teaching himself game theory and decided the way he was going to do that is teach a course to undergrads about game theory. And the idea, you know, you could at any time just learn new skills and do so in an unstructured way, free from your own curiosity and interests. And that was an incredible draw for me. And political science in particular had this amazing thing that, unlike every other field and discipline that I was looking at the college level, I was allowed to take whatever course I wanted within the field of political science. So I could start with all the fun advanced courses and skip over all the introductory boring courses. And that meant that, like, now ex post, I realized that the lack of structure has a lot of cost to it. But at the time, it was exhilarating. I could take courses where I was reading speeches by Castro or like actually reading real research. And I could do that when I just started. It was exciting. It was offered a synthesis of different perspectives that I thought was useful. And it seemed like an open area for doing work. Now, I was also, because I was interested in abstract stuff, I also got interested in philosophy, analytic philosophy, and formal reasoning and logic and that sort of thing. But the problem there was the people who were really amazing at it were just incredible writers, incredible thinkers. And there were very few of them that managed to survive and excel. It seemed to me that it was just a really rough market. And the humanities in general were suffering. And so I decided, for career concern reasons, to really emphasize the political science direction. And I would say, looking back on it, that was the right move, although, you know, I sometimes wonder what life would have been like if I ended up being a philosopher. But as soon as I basically discovered what it was like to what I saw political, like what a professor could do with their day when I was in college, I was like, that's the career. That's what I wanted to be able to do, too. I saw Michael Neblo teaching about, you know, Jose Saramago or whatever, that attracted me, that intellectual freedom attracted me to the field and to the academic community as a whole.
So I'm curious about what you think is the most fun part about being a professor.
Obviously, I enjoy the intellectual freedom, right? So when I was in grad school, I had this tendency, I would go to all the workshops on political theory, the workshops on comparative politics, international relations, in which there'd be people coming in at the cutting edge of their various fields, presenting their best ideas for you to just consume. And that is just so much fun, to engage with people who are thinking hard about their problems and coming up with new ideas. And you get to see them every week from all over the world and engage with the top minds in the world. And they give you the time of day. The openness to the conversation about ideas that you would never, like, you go to a library. When I was a kid, I would go to the library, I'd read these books, and I'd be like, wow, it's great that I have all these books. I wish I had more of them. It never occurred to me that you could talk to the authors and the process of producing this work. And the idea that you can engage with people who are at the top of their game and thinking about all these really hard things, and you get to think about them too, and maybe help them a little bit. It's just, it's really, really exciting. And I would say that's the most fun. So I love the workshop culture. It's really strong here at the University of Chicago. The political science department has a number of workshops. There's also workshops, collaborative workshops in the other parts of the parts of the university, in the law school and in the economics department at Booth Business School and at Harris Public Policy School. All these communities of just the smartest people at the planet working on the most cutting edge stuff that they can come up with from all over the world. It's just so exciting. And so I'd say that's probably the most fun that I have on a weekly basis.
On the flip side of that, what is your least favorite part of the job?
So I would say my least favorite part of the job, let's put it the most stressful, is that, you know, when I teach, which I find to be, I'll talk about this later, probably, you know, extremely gratifying, I take it as a very heavy responsibility to be fair in the evaluation of students. And I find the fact that people need to balance it's very difficult to help students balance the incentives necessary for them to actually invest in material, like creating grades and tests and that sort of thing, versus the reality that these tests are designed to rank and sort, and the establishing and evaluating of students when I know that this is going to determine their future careers is a big burden. And I find it to be challenging, but I also find it to be very important. So it's not something I shy away from, but I would say it's definitely the least fun part of the job.
And what advice would you have for people who are interested in following a similar path to yours?
I would say, you know, continue investing in the things that you enjoy about the field, because you're never going to succeed unless you're getting something out of it intrinsically. So, you know, when you write papers and you write books and you engage in the academic life, it can be a very lonely experience and one that in which there's very delayed feedback for anything that you do. You can write a paper and it might be a long time before you hear from anybody whether it's any good or not. And so you have to be able to obtain gratification from your day-to-day participation in the field. And that is to say, you have to find things. You don't have to find things. It better be the case that you're enjoying it, because there's nothing else that's going to make this worth it for you, right? You have to enjoy the freedom that you have been afforded to you, because otherwise it can be quite stressful. It can be quite challenging. A lot of delayed gratification, a lot of patience is required. And so I would say, make sure that you are enjoying it, because there's lots of other ways to spend your life that are as valuable and as rewarding and offer other ways to, indulge your curiosity and that sort of thing outside the academy, I'm sure. So that's my main piece of advice, is make sure that you're actually getting something out of it as you do it. And then my other advice is, you know, I was always interested in everything. You know, I was reading and engaging in all of the things associated with it. But at the end of the day, you're going to be talking to a community. And so my other bit of advice is, find that community and ensure that you're part of it. Participate in it. Make sure your work is responsive to the other people in your field, and make sure that it's part of your career, that you are aware that there's not 1,000 people that will be engaged with you, but rather maybe 100 or even less. And those are your peers and colleagues. They'll be reviewing your work. They'll be part of your life for a long time. And so make sure that that's a community that you choose intentionally, that you enjoy participating in, and that you fit in or you feel welcome to be in, and make sure that you get there. Because otherwise, again, there's a lot of downsides in terms of the individual isolation and the delay on any sort of like response to your work that can be very discouraging otherwise.
I appreciate that answer, Robert. I'm curious about what your professional goals are for yourself. Like, where next? What are you aiming for at the moment?
So, as I've said, I have been interested in international political economy for a while. I think that I really enjoy that community and I want to continue to develop it. But I think that what I would like to do is to try to ensure that that community survives and thrives by making a concerted effort to improve access to this subject or this subfield. I feel that there's been some really great work out at Berkeley by Ryan Brutker showing how you can reach underserved communities that would otherwise not go into graduate training by mentoring and facilitating that sort of thing. But I also think that as a field, we don't do a very good job of marketing ourselves. And I think if in the future, maybe not immediately, but in the medium run, I would like to make sure that my area and the community of people that I interact with survive and thrive. And that's going to require new participants and new memberships. And I have a sense that this will involve other countries, students from around the world, and not just the United States, but also from communities within the United States that otherwise would not be exposed to this sort of research. It's a broad idea that I have that I would like to improve the field. Now, in terms of my own research area, I've been doing work that's increasingly methodological in the sense that I'm doing work that I hope could have effects on how people study political science more generally. And that is in particular an attention to the theoretical models that we use to write down our ideas about how politics works. And I think we've moved in the recent era, there's been a move away from sort of theoretical statements of things because of an attention to credibility of claims, the use of experiments and other technologies that have been developed that allow us to make fewer assumptions of the world when we make inferences. And those have been really positive, but there hasn't been a similar attention to what we're doing when we do our work. Like, what does the quantity that we estimate mean for the real life? On the policy side, that's less of an issue. So people who study policymaking, they have a clear connection between the things that they care about and their studies. There's a policy that they want to know whether they should do it or not, whether it's worth it or not, and they do an experiment that tries to approximate what it would be like if that policy were in place. Political science questions or more academic questions are dependent more on a particular social and political model, and we don't yet have a good way of connecting those areas. There's been an effort called the Empirical Implications of Theoretical Models, EITM, that was funded by the NSF for a decade. And while that has made a lot of progress in some areas, it has not had a sort of popularizing effect because of the technical demands on both sides of both doing empirical work and theoretical work. And so that's another area that I would like to try to make a dent.
And finally, Robert, what do you find most fulfilling about the work that you do?
So hopefully everyone who is a professor for a living is aware of this, but like the opportunity for teaching and shaping people's minds is by far and away the most fulfilling thing we do. It's not always the most fun because it can be a little bit repetitive sometimes, or it can be a little bit tedious, or it's work. But in terms of immediate gratification, nothing is as close. The idea that you can teach someone something that they've never experienced before, show them a new way of thinking, and reveal something that was obscure to them, that's what we're here for, I would say. It is by far and away the most gratifying thing we can do, and it's the most important thing that we do from a social standpoint, is to shape the minds of tomorrow. So teaching, for sure, is the most gratifying thing that we do.
Thank you, Professor Robert Galati, for your time today. And course takers, if you enjoyed listening to today's interview, please check out the other ones. Leave us a comment, subscribe, follow, and share this episode with your friends and family. You can find out more about the University of Chicago through uchicago.edu or the university's campus in Hong Kong through uchicago.hk. Stay tuned for more, and thanks for listening.